Well, we have been in the book of 1 John, and we are continuing in that again today. So if you need a Bible, go ahead and slip your hands up, and the ushers will bring you one. Otherwise, turn to 1 John chapter 2 is where we'll start today. I have two daughters. I have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old, and they're both awesome, and they have their own amazing energy. And one of the things that is interesting, if you've ever had kids or if you've experienced any time around kids, there's an age, and I don't know, it'll vary from kid to kid, but there's an age where the child is young enough that they're so confident in who you are as dad and mom that their lives are literally in their hand. And I'll use an example of that. And this changes and this varies per kid, or maybe they've fallen, but if you've ever sat a 1-year-old on like the edge of a table and you've stood there, they'll literally just like flop out in front and expect you to catch them, right? So if you're not paying attention, it's like faceplant kid, right? If you've ever thrown kids up in the air, like there's an age at some point where they start getting a little scared of the height, or they start getting a little nervous about you catching them. You can see them clinch up, but there's an age where you throw them up and they're like just like a dead fish, like, yay, this is fun, and there's no tension at all. There's just this immense confidence that you're gonna catch them. In fact, I remember I don't even know when this was a while ago, I was in a parking lot with Ava, and she's my older one, and she kind of came out of the car and started walking out further, and there was a car coming. I'm like, Ava, stop, and, you know, went and got her. And it's like, you can't do that. You can't walk out in front of a car because you might get hit. And I remember her just so confidently saying, well, yeah, but you'd take care of it if I got hit, right? Like, everything would be okay, right, Dad? Like, it's just, in her own words, she was just saying basically, like, nothing can happen to me because you're here. Yet there's other times when Ava is very, very unconfident in her surroundings. Like, so the other day she was in her room, she was afraid of dragons possibly being there. And I was telling her, like, that's not gonna happen, you're okay. Like, you realize, like, we can take care of it. But there was no convincing her. There was this fear. But at some point earlier in her age, again, there was this confidence in me, specifically, in Gen 2, but specifically me as a dad. So much confidence that she would do absolutely anything. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not a perfect parent. In fact, I'm today probably ruining my children day by day as I go along. And I know that all of us are in some regard, so if you're not a parent, look forward to that. But here's the thing. there's hope in it too, because I can give her a picture of a loving dad. I can show her a picture of a dad that makes mistakes and loves her. But the downside is I will never be the perfect dad for her. I will never, ever be able to point to her exactly the way I live, babe. You need to follow Christ this way because I will fall. I will fail at times. And I tell you this story because understanding our present position with God and our future hope of Jesus coming back would change the way that we live our life today. And see, our present position, and you got to remember, if you go back 2 weeks, Russell was in a different section of Scripture, but if you go back 2 weeks, we talked about the Spirit of God that lives in us when we die, to everything that Josh was talking about at the first part. All the work of what Jesus did on the cross and the resurrection after that. When we follow him, we are adopted as God's children. And I think, as I was studying this week, I may be wrong in this, and you guys can challenge me on this as well, but I think that most of our issues right now are daddy issues. Most of our issues in our lives are daddy issues, in the fact that we aren't confident as children of God. We're not confident in the fact that he will catch us when we jump off the table. We tense up when he throws us up in the air instead of just enjoying the moment. And we really lose confidence in God, and I think that affects every area of our life. And again, the thing that's hard about that is I had a great dad. I think he's awesome. He's not even here to hear that. He's traveling on vacation without me. And a great dad. And so, but even then, he's not the best picture of who God is. And as I'm speaking to a group this side, I'm sure there are a lot of people in here that don't have a dad. Maybe that they've lost their dad, or their dad just was horrible. And so what's so tough is when God calls himself Father, it sends a stigma in each of us of what our dad did or didn't do, and we line up God with that picture. And then everything we are and do from there funnels through that ill-conceived, that wrong picture of who God is. And so I think it's really interesting that John, as he does so often in this book, he weaves in and he's encouraging people, like, don't forget, you have the Spirit of God with you. And then he comes here and he encourages us where we are today, just before next week, where he's going to punch us in the throat. So if you want to miss a week, that's the one to miss, because that's where he'll be next week. But if you look at 1 John 2, the end of it, we're going to dig in. I'm going to read in it, because see, John is encouraging everyone to know that when you surrender your life, not only do you have the Spirit of God, but now what he's going to do is he's going to take the encouragement one step further. And he's going to hit, like I said, the biggest thing. He's going to hit the fact that you and I, if we surrender our life to Jesus, you and I are children of the Most High God. We have been adopted in, and he is our daddy. And again, some of us, we hear that, and we're like, man, I don't want him to be like my dad. Or my dad's been gone so long, I have no idea of what that looks like. But yet God, in his grace, adopts us and calls himself father to us. So let's look at this. I'm gonna dig right in. We're gonna just read it. Verses 28 from 2 through 3:3. And now, little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink from him in shame at his coming. If you know that he is righteous, you may be sure that everyone who practices righteousness has been born of him. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God. And so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared, but we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. And there's just so much in this section, and the ESV broke it up this way, where 28 is kind of like a thing. The "and now" kind of tells you an idea that this is a new topic of where he's going. This is a new specific location. But he does something that he said over and over and over again, and I think it's worth paying attention to. Now remember, the Apostle John is old at this time. I mean, really old. Like, he's in his early 90s, late 80s. We don't know exactly the year, but he's old at this age. And he does this. He calls them little children. But then look at what he says right after that. He says, little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, we. John, who's 50 plus years older than most people he's writing to, lumps himself in as a little child. And he's been calling them little children for a long time, and it's an endearing term, and in a way it's kind of like new believers at time, he uses it in that context as new believers, and other times it's just children of God. But John lumps himself in as a little children this time, as a little child. And what he says is we. He pulls we. It's important to know that, because everything he's about to say now, he's speaking to himself in this as well. And he says, abide in him. And that means to remain. And we see that over and over again. Abide in him. Remain with God. Remain in him. Stay with him. Don't waffle. Don't wander. He says, because if we do, we can have confidence and not shrink back at his coming. So this is the first thing we can see all over in the text. In fact, a bajillion times in the New Testament, and even Jesus saying it, and a bunch of times in the Old Testament, talks about Jesus coming back a second time. So you and I live in the time where he's already come, and now he is making all things new, and at some point will come again and restore everything. And this, the heaven will be on earth as it was made in heaven, right? So we'll be together. Everything will be new. Sin gone, brokenness gone, eternity begins. So we see that it's coming. Now he says there's a difference. There's confidence, and there's shrinking away. There's a way that we can live our life now with confidence, so that when he shows up, that word translates outspokenness. Really, what he's meaning here when he says confidence in God, he's saying that you can approach God with confidence. It's meaning I have confidence that he's my dad and I can approach him. And the shrink away can translate almost naked. It's like when you've been exposed that you're naked, you just shrink away. You feel like everyone sees every shortcoming of you. And all you want to do is run, because it hurts too much to be exposed like that. And he's saying there's a way that you and I, as children of God, can live in confidence. We can be confident. We can drop off the tabletop into his arms and not run forward in fear. And then verse 29, he says, if. I don't like this translation. It's more since. Since is what that translates better. The ESV says that. So since... Since you know that he is righteous, you may be sure that everyone who practices righteousness has been born of him. First off, if is translated since, and then this is really interesting, because most of the translations would say, since you know that he is righteous, you may also know that everyone who practices righteousness. But I love that this translation is different because the first no is a perception. That little word means a perception of absolute truth. You have perceived absolute truth. You know that God is righteous. That is absolute truth. The second, to be sure, that means that we have perceived. We have perceived the knowledge. So that means that we've experienced it. We've experienced it. It's experiential knowledge. So now I know absolute truth, God is righteous, and I've experienced righteousness in my own life, and so I'm sure of that. I want to be clear about righteousness too. He says righteousness doesn't save us, just so you guys know. Some people will use this as a text to go, okay, great, now I got to figure out how to live more righteous so that I'm saved. No, it's by faith alone you're saved, right? It's by faith alone in the work of Christ that you're saved. And really, let's be honest, it's not even really for you. It's more about bringing glory to God. Right? So it's by faith alone, but righteousness will be evidence of our life being changed for him. The righteousness that we have will be evidence of our life. We forget sometimes that when we're battling our shortcomings in our life, this is Christians or people that profess to follow Jesus are so good at beating yourself up. So good. In fact, we look at our own shortcomings, and sometimes it's the same struggles that we have over and over and over again, and we forget what John just told us a few verses earlier, or what we can see also in 2 Peter 1:3, that his divine power has granted to us all things that pertain to life and godliness through the knowledge of him who called us to his own glory and excellence. That means that we have everything inside of us, guys, to beat the shortcomings that are in place, not by our own strength, but by what he's put in us. So we don't have to say, well, I'll never ever defeat this. I'll never be free of this sin. I'll never be rid of this shortcoming. I will always be insecure. I will always be prideful. I will always love money too much. No, all of those things are small in comparison to the power that lives inside of you. We have all of his power inside of us. And then in verse 1, he says, see or behold. And this is kind of the crux of this section right here. Behold, what I'm about to say is really big. Pay attention. That's what he's saying right here. He says, what kind of love, or how great a love of God? That term, how great or what kind of love, is only used 7 times in the New Testament. Essentially what that means, that word means, is we have no idea how to explain it. There's no words that do justice of the love that God has shown. It makes no sense. There's no great translation into English of what they're trying to say here. How great? It's impossible to articulate. How great is the love? What kind of love has the Father has given to us that we should be called children? Children of him. Children of the Most High God. Children. See, and I think so much of what we, our understanding of what that is right there, affects every aspect of our life. Because, see, some of us want to earn that. Some of us want to earn that, and I think John knew that, because he goes right into it. He says, beloved, it was given to us. You can't earn that. It was given to us. It was unmerited, undeserved, but graciously given to us. You cannot do anything to gain that love, but his love is so good that he did it. And therefore, we can be called children of God. Do you personally believe that you're a child of God? Like, really, if you looked at your life, do you have the confidence to sit on the table and fall off into daddy's arms? Whatever aspect of life it may mean. Maybe for you it's, I don't believe that he can beat this addiction in me. Then you're not confident that he's your daddy. Maybe it's, I don't believe that he really cares about me. I've been wanting to be married forever. Then you're not confident that he's your dad. Confidence rests in God, and then everything else is fed through that. In fact, so much so that when you are confident that he's your dad, it doesn't make sense to this world. And this is a question I have for you guys. Maybe your life makes too much sense to this world. Maybe you aren't so confident in being a child of God that you are too conformed to this world. Remember John, just a few verses before this, talked about, look, you either love God or you love the world. He's saying that over and over and over again. And I think the problem is with you and I is at times we look too much like the world. Our life makes perfect sense to this world. And what he says, look, if you know Jesus, if you love him and you're being made like him, then that will be confusing at times to the world. And I understand our fear in this because sometimes people have used that as a reason to hold up hate signs. Or they've used that as a reason to not love or to stand out. Look, I'm just not going to be understood by the world. No. You can't negate everything else he's taught us. But some of us at times, our life needs to be a little more confusing to the people around us. For God's glory, not for mine, not for yours, not so people can go, oh, wow, they're so holy. But they should be baffled at times of the peace that comes through some of the trials you're battling through. They should be baffled at times the love you show despite the fact that you've been beat up a few times. American churches has it so easy. It's easy for us to see that the Chinese church doesn't make sense because their life is on the line. And then verse 2, I just want this to sneak in. He says, and we are God's children now. Now. You're God's children. You are God's child now. Let that sink in, because some of us think, okay, maybe someday I'll be better. Yeah, he even tells, he goes in like, look, you're not exactly what he wants of you yet, but God's not done with you. But today you're his child. Today he's your dad. And he's a dad that we can't fathom or understand because we have no good picture of it here on earth. But today he's your daddy. When you surrendered your life to him, you died to your way and said, God, I want yours. Jesus, I will follow you. You didn't say, Jesus, come along for the ride. You said, I die to myself. Jesus, I want to be more like you. And so God begins to refine you, cut off branches of you that doesn't look like him. And he's making you more and more and more like his son, Jesus Christ. So that when he comes back, we look like him. Not because of what I did, not because of how holy I looked, but because of me surrendering my life to the Spirit of God that lives inside of me and letting that move me, letting that lead me. And then in verse 3, he says, to purify oneself. Brings the word pure. I think it's important to know that this does not mean to start making yourself better. It means that the Spirit of God works in us to make us more like Christ. But there's a tie to that. Our obedience, our time in God's word feeds the Spirit of God living inside of us. So me surrendering to him means that I will obey him as well. But I get to do it by the strength that he's given me. And in that process, I'm being made pure. I'm being made more and more and more like Jesus. What's hard when it comes to this child of God is some of you have, may I say it, crappy lives. You look at your surroundings right now and you're just mad because everything's falling apart and it seems like nothing's going your way. And if Dad really loved me, then why in the world is he letting me just go through this right now? If Dad really loved me, wouldn't he just give me my heart's desires? We take scriptures like, oh, he works everything for the good of those who love him. Like it's all about us. But then we're ruining scriptures like Romans 8:16-17 says, the Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs. There you go, guys. If children, we get it all. Heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may also be glorified with him. Being a child of God does not mean an easy life. If you signed up to follow God because you wanted yourself a little security statement or some kind of insurance later on and wanted to be able to escape through so you can have a perfect marriage and a perfect family and a great job, you missed the point. Yeah, those things may come if that's what God desires. Those things may happen, but you got to also suffer with him. And it's funny that he says abide. Remember where else we hear that word abide? To remain. We hear that in James when it says remain under in trials. Stay put, because what God is doing right now is he is making you more like his son Jesus, so that when Jesus comes back, you can confidently stand. Let's go. Let's do this, because I'm confident that you're my dad and you'll catch me. Even at times when I don't understand, been trying to tell my daughter this for over and over again. It's like, you know I love you, right? Yes, you love me. Okay, you don't understand why I say no to this right now, but I believe that's what's best for you. And we have a God that understands discipline, what we want, what we need, way better than any of our dads ever will. He understands everything. In fact, he knows us better than anyone ever will. So I want to talk real quickly about false confidence. Some of us will use this confidence and we'll use it as an idea of like, okay, God's some kind of genie, right, in my life. Like he's just going to, I rub the lamp and I'm confident, yep, God will come through, and we just expect him to answer. Not because it's his will, not because it brings glory to him, but because we believe we deserve that. Guys, what we deserve is what Jesus took for us. What we deserve is to hang on the cross for our own sins and take the wrath of God. That's what we deserve. But he graciously took our place so that we could be adopted and so that we could call him dad. So some kind of God is a genie, make my life better. False confidence is not what he's talking about here. Confidence in, I know what I am. I'm so thankful for what he's making me. Now here I am, God. Stand before him confident as your dad. Do you have confidence that God is your daddy? This is where it all comes to truth in our lives, guys. Everything funnels through us. I'm confident of the fact that everything is rested in this. If you don't believe that he's your dad, or you believe he's the dad that maybe failed you here on earth, that will feed every aspect of our life. We will walk through that reality. But he knows you. He loves you. And he says, look, I've given you my spirit to do the very things that I'm asking of you. And here's the thing. What you're going through right now, as bad as your life is right now, if God's your daddy, he's in control. In fact, God's in control either way, but he's in control of your life. See, God knows every situation. He knows that you may be depressed right now. He understands that maybe you're lonely. He understands that you're jobless. He understands that you don't understand him. He knows all of those things. And he still says, would you just be confident like a one-year-old that would fall off the end of a table and catch? Abel is confident that if she got hit by a car that I would just be able to fix it. And it's interesting how God always takes us back. Jesus even did it. Faith like a child. Some of us just want to be too grown up, too fast. We pretend like we don't need him as our dad. But the reality of it, guys, we always need to be his child. We always need him leading us. We always need to be able to come to him and say, I'm mad. I'm mad, Dad. I'm hurting, Dad. I love you, Dad. What he does when he calls himself a father is he takes it no longer as some deity out far that is in control and sovereign, which he is, and he makes it very personal and relational. He says, look, come to me. I'm your dad, and I love you. I got this. Maybe it doesn't seem like it. Everything's falling around you, but I'm still your dad. Let me pray. Father, thank you. Thank you for adopting me. Thank you for showing me what it means to be a dad. God, I just know that without your strength inside of me, I'm going to mess up what it means to be a dad to my girls, God. So, Father, I pray that you would just help each person in here learn a little bit more of what it means to call you dad. And not some picture of dad that maybe is messed up by this world, or an absent dad, or a broken dad, because God, this world is so broken. But recognizing that you are making all things new, and that you are our dad, and that you love us. God, I don't even know how to instill this, but I just pray that each person's heart, whether they are mad at you, or are sad, or lonely, or depressed, whatever they are, God, I just pray that they would approach you as a dad that cares, as a dad that loves them, as a dad that has the control to change everything, as long as it brings glory to him and it makes us more like your son, Jesus Christ. So, Father, I pray for those of us that are lonely or sad or depressed or angry at you, God, I pray that you would remind us of your love, that you remind us if it's an honor to call you Dad. The Most High God, how great of a love is that, God? I'm so unworthy of it, and yet you still do it. And God, for those that have been following you for a long time, maybe stepping out a little too far in front of you and forgetting that they still need to check in with Dad. God, would you draw us? Would you rein us back? I even pray, would you break us of our pride? Would you rein us back to where we would just really be, as silly as it sounds, excited to just sit on your knee and hear your stories? Excited to sit in front of your scriptures and just listen to you speak to us, God. God, would we be able to approach you more confidently so that when you come again, like you promise, we can be confident in who you have made us to be. It's in Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.